The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 12:23 a.m., February 2nd, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
Hi, thanks for checking in with the Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly, and this is K-Voice of Resistance.
Resist!
Preston's reverence for those who have served our nation reminds us of why we salute our flag and why we proudly stand for the national anthem, American
Time
flag.
Time to begin moving toward a merit-based immigration system.
We have eliminated more regulations in our first year than any administration in the history of our country.
Americans are ended the war on American energy. And we have ended the war on beautiful, clean coal.
American flag. In the past, we have foolishly released hundreds and hundreds of dangerous territories.
Decades of unfair trade.
Americans are dreamers, too.
We must modernize and rebuild our nuclear arsenal.
American foreign assistance dollars always serve
and to keep
American
open interest.
The detention facilities in Guantanamo Bay. Keep open the detention facilities in Guantanamo Bay.
Guantanamo flag.
Guantanamo flag. Guantanamo flag.
Who suffered through Donald's State of the Union? Union. Which, if you did not hear, was misspelled as U-N-I-O-M, Union, on the tickets. Seriously, can this administration do anything right?
It's terrifying how incompetent they are.
I watched the Union. It was so long. Like, so long. It was laborious, filled with cliches, just terrible writing every way going. He was clapping for himself. There were lots of painful stories, like he did a year ago in his joint session speech, where he used people's tragedies for an applause line to illustrate, to justify his heinous policies. It is the most cynical thing I have seen, and not just from him, but from anyone in politics that I can remember. The first half was a weak attempt at positivity and unification, while the second was veiled, or mostly overt, jabs at the left, and mostly immigrant fear-mongering.
That was truly disgusting.
He even brought on two families that lost their children to immigrants.
It is as low as it gets.
I thought the white geriatric Republicans were going to throw out a hip in their rush to stand and cheer so enthusiastically. And Donald, who, according to stats by the Washington Post's fact checker, had said more than 2,000 things that were either totally false or broadly misleading before he had even spent a full year in office, did not break the trend, including the repeating of his new favorite, where he wrongly asserts that his tax cuts were the biggest in American history, making 55 times he's repeated that whopper, and counting. That he lied consistently throughout his speech is unsurprising, but it matters. It is important to never lose sight of the fact that the person doing the lying, and the lying, and the lying, and the lying, and the lying, is the President of the United States. And it's no laughing matter. Remember, we must keep telling ourselves that this is not normal.
This is not normal.
And, you know, he can lie about the small things, like this tweet that the State of the Union, quote, 45.6 million people watched, the highest number in history, unquote. That's a lie. According to Nielsen, it is the sixth highest watched of all time. He can lie about that and not put national security on the line. But there are many, many lies that will jeopardize our security. There are times, in times in crisis, when we need to trust the word of our president, of our government. And there is no one I trust in our government when it matters, outside of maybe some Democrats. So, as for the Union, there were no surprises, and little to no policy outline of where we are headed in this coming year, like the State of the Union usually does. It was little more than 80 grueling minutes where Donald clapped for himself, and I practiced my temper control and breathing exercises. Black. And then
oh. It is a fitting place to gather as our nation reflects on the state of our union. This is a difficult task. Many have spent the last year anxious, angry, afraid. We all feel the fractured fault lines across our country.
We had the Democratic response, and it was a breath of fresh air. Joe Kennedy, obviously of the Kennedy dynasty, was, first of all, skilled at delivering a speech, which was awesome. It moved, it had levels, it was fast at points and slowed when poignancy was needed. It was well written without trying too hard. I loved that he did it to an audience as opposed to the on-camera hostage video that we're used to in these terrible response videos. And I feel like he nailed the message. It was inclusive and hopeful. It was an indictment of Donald and the GOP without attacking them. It was the closest I have seen to an Obama Yes We Can speech in a long time. One of the strongest things he did was highlight how over the past year we have been handed one false choice after another.
We are bombarded with one false choice after another. Coal miners or single moms? Rural communities or inner cities? The coast or the heartland? As if the mechanic in Pittsburgh, a teacher in Tulsa, and a daycare worker in Birmingham are bitter rivals, rather than mutual casualties of a system forcefully rigged towards those at the top. As if the parent who lies awake, terrified that their transgender son or daughter will be beaten and bullied at school, is any more or less legitimate and a parent whose heart is shattered by a daughter in the grips of an opioid addiction. So here is the answer the Democrats offer tonight. We choose both.
Doesn't that say what the Democrats are about and more than anything we have heard lately? We choose you. His speech was compassionate and intersectional.
You bravely say, me too. You steadfastly say, Black Lives Matter. You wade through floodwaters, battle hurricanes, brave wildfires and mudslides to save a stranger. You battle your own quiet battles every single day. You drag your weary bodies to that extra shift so that your families won't feel the sting of scarcity. You leave loved ones at home to defend our country overseas, patrol our neighborhoods at night. You serve. You rescue. You help. You heal. That, more than any law or leader, debate or disagreement, that is what drives us towards progress.
And this next section also moved me.
Politicians can be cheered for the promises they make. Our country will be judged by the promises we keep.
How's that for a Democratic message? We keep our promises. Boom. We don't need an 18-point plan on how they will, or what we do, maybe online, so we can look it up and read it if we want to, but not as a slogan, not in a speech. No, we need sound bites. America is busy and tired, and many are not too bright. Keep it simple.
Sometimes Democrats are too smart for their own good.
Now, I have seen critiques about the Dems not choosing a person of color or a woman, and they're valid, but Kennedy was hopeful, youthful, and a breath of fresh air. I also think that not having someone who is a presidential hopeful in 2020 was refreshing. I do believe that having someone middle America is more likely to listen to, being a white man, was a strategic choice, and I'm okay with it. And there's also something to calling back the Kennedy name as a callback to a time when politics was better. A politics from a time that we romanticize. Okay, enough of that noise. Let's check in with the state of our nation. This week, the media is obsessed with, and I mean obsessed with, the stupid Nunes memo. The media is nonstop about it, and no one's even seen the damn thing. So the Republicans go after Hillary for mishandling classified information. And then what are they doing with the Nunes memo? That the intelligence agencies say will have grave consequences if they are released? Mishandling classified information. Nunes never even read the FISA report that he based the damn memo on. It is all propaganda orchestrated by the White House and made popular by the corrupt Republicans, Trump TV, otherwise known as Fox Quote News, unquote, and a whole horde of Russian bots. At this point, I am eager for them to release the damn thing because there is no way it lives up to the hype from the right. It will come out, it will suck up an entire news cycle or three, and finally go away.
Bye-bye!
The media is doing all the talking about this stupid memo that no one has seen than could possibly be necessary. Meanwhile, our government is doing things that no one is hearing about.
This administration isn't just targeting the laws that protect us. They're targeting the very idea that we are all worthy of protection.
For example, it is Black History Month, and Donald's administration rung it in by rolling back more civil rights protections.
That's stupid!
The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protections Bureau, was created to protect consumers. But these days, it should be called the Corporation Financial Protections Bureau. According to Common Dreams, the White House reportedly stripped the CFPB office of the power to take action against financial firms accused of breaking laws against racist lending practices. In other words, go ahead, discriminate.
Oh, we don't care.
Instead of enforcing anti-discrimination laws and penalizing criminal banks, the CFPB's Office of Fair Lending and Equal Opportunity will now be focused on, quote, advocacy, coordination, and education, unquote. According to an email sent out to Bureau employees by White House Budget Chief and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions' leprechaun friend, Mick Mulvaney. Who was installed as CFPB's acting director. The guy is awful. And now Mulvaney will have full control of the lending office, which was previously outside of the CFPB head's direct authority. Elizabeth Warren told The Intercept that, quote, for years, Mick Mulvaney opposed the CFPB's efforts to fight discrimination in the consumer financial marketplace. Mulvaney is putting the Office of Fair Lending under his control so that he can weaken it, leaving neighborhoods and consumers across the country more vulnerable to bias, unquote. As an example of what the CFPB's Office of Fair Lending and Equal Opportunity did, they helped to resolve, quote, the largest redlining case in history against Hudson City Savings, which paid $33 million for lending assistance and community programs on behalf of majority Black and Hispanic neighborhoods in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania, unquote. It is another example of Donald's Republican administration taking over where career civil servants used to have autonomy. Donald has this habit of trolling any group of people who has a day dedicated to them. With African Americans having a whole month this month, we can guarantee that this will be a bad month for civil rights protections. Watch out, NFL players. Who knows what's coming down the pike?
Their record is a rebuke to our highest American ideal, the belief that we are all worthy, that we are all equal, that we all count in the eyes of our law and our leaders, our God and our government. That is the American promise. But today, ladies and gentlemen, today, that promise is being broken by an administration that callously appraises our worthiness and decides who makes the cut and who can be bargained away.
Also missing from the news was this. The New York Times reports that the Department of Justice has functionally shuttered the Office of Access to Justice. That is the office focused on legal aid for the poor. The offices are dark, the director has left to a private sector without a replacement, and staff dwindled. The Office of Access to Justice was established in 2010. On its website, the challenge the office was established to address was defined as this, quote, millions of people in the United States cannot get legal help that is often critical to their well-being and freedom. 50 million Americans qualify for federally funded legal aid, yet more than half of those who seek help are turned away due to lack of resources. In the criminal justice system, public defenders handle caseloads that far exceed recommended limits, jeopardizing their ability to provide representation that meets even constitutionally minimum standards, unquote. And since our conservative government could give a crap about the poor, it is yet another casualty of our Republican administration. It's not all bad news, though. In a win for civil rights, social justice, and criminal justice reform, San Francisco, following the legalization of marijuana in California, will be applying the law retroactively to weed-related convictions dating back to 1975. San Francisco Gate explained that, quote, Proposition 64 legalized recreation of marijuana in California for those 21 and older. The legalization allows those with past marijuana convictions that would have been lesser crimes, or no crimes at all, under Prop 64 to petition the court to recall to dismiss their cases, unquote. I mean, San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon said that his office will dismiss and seal 3,038 misdemeanor convictions. And not only that, they will review and possibly resentence up to 4,940 felony convictions dating back to 1975. This is huge! And you can bet more states and cities will follow. Gascon said in a statement that his city is, quote, taking the lead to undo the damage that this country's disastrous failed drug war has had on our nation, and on communities of color in particular, unquote. New York City, you're up.
And to all the dreamers out there watching tonight, let me be absolutely clear. Ustedes son parte de nuestra historia. Vamos a luchar. Vamos a luchar por ustedes. Y no nos vamos a alejar. You are part of our story. We will fight for you, and we will not walk away.
The clock is ticking on dreamers, so make your voice heard. Tell your representatives to pass a clean DACA bill now, or nationwide, an estimated 20,000 DACA-eligible teachers, many of them possessing key Spanish language skills that are in high demand, could be plucked from the classroom. This, while recent findings by the Economic Policy Institute, a D.C.-based think tank backed by labor unions, suggest that public schools already have a teacher shortage. An October 6th report found that given rising student populations, public schools are short by about 327,000 educators.
The Russians have a long history of these information campaigns. That part of it's not new. This threat's not going to go away. The Russians have been at this a long time, and I fully expect they'll continue to be at it.
Do you have concerns that they might try and interfere in the U.S. midterms, which are coming up?
Of course. I have every expectation that they will continue to try and do that. But I'm confident that America will be able to have a free and fair election that will push back in a way that is sufficiently robust that the impact they have on our election won't be great.
That was CIA Director Mike Pompeo addressing Russian election interference as it relates to America's upcoming midterm elections. It comes as the Trump administration says there is no need for new sanctions against Russia relating to the 2016 election interference issues.
Another thing that's not nearly in the news enough right now is we need to talk about Russia sanctions. I know there are so many things to be outraged about in our current body politic. I also know that outrage fatigue is very real and a very powerful thing that we are experiencing. But this thing is kind of a big deal. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I can hardly blame you. Because Memogate has sucked all the oxygen out of the room. Okay, let me put it this way. In 2016, a foreign country invaded and executed a systematic attack on America. They successfully took out one of our presidential candidates and placed their own chosen person in charge of the whole of America. In America. As a representative democracy, we the people hold elections to send to Washington, D.C. representatives to be our voice and act for us, right? So the whole of America collectively elected 435 members of Congress. We sent 100 to serve in the Senate and 435 to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, 430 of those 435 representatives who we, the people, elected voted to impose sanctions on this foreign power. So the same foreign power that attacked us last year, who continues to attack us today. Only five people chose not to punish this invading country. The people have spoken in no uncertain terms. This call for sanctions is veto-proof. It has a veto-proof majority, so our president, the one that this foreign power installed legally, cannot veto the bill. And yet, He has simply chosen not to impose those sanctions.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah. He has taken your and my vote. He has taken the vote of our representatives, and he has said, meh, I don't think so. Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill, among others, announced that we are in a constitutional crisis as a result. Here's the thing, though. Donald has not broken the law. He did so by signing the bill for the sanctions and simply not imposing them. Instead, he is, well, or rather, he is not doing anything. He can't figure out how to open a damn Happy Meal, let alone find a workaround for the sanctions bill. His people are playing with the wording of the bill as to get around the sanctions. Wikipedia says, in political science, a constitutional crisis is a problem or a conflict in the function of a government that the political constitution, or rather the fundamental governing law, is perceived to be unable to resolve. According to 538, there are four kinds of constitutional crises. Seeing as the constitution is brief and vague, it leaves many things left without a directive from the constitution and how to resolve them. That is where we run into our first form of constitutional crisis. There are circumstances where the constitution will not tell us what to do. For example, it was not till 1967 that we officially resolved what we were to do when something happened to the president. When William Henry Harrison became the first president to die in office in 1841, they didn't know if the vice president was to take over or simply hold the office protected until a new one was elected, appointed, put in place somehow. We didn't know. In 1967, we enacted the 25th Amendment, which officially settled the question. The second constitutional crisis is when the Constitution's meaning is in question. So both the Great Depression and the Civil War created constitutional crises. With the Civil War, it was on the question of how a state can leave the Union, because the Constitution says a lot about how a state can join the Union, but little to nothing about how a state can leave it. And during the Great Depression, there were many questions as to how much control the president could assert over the economy. It was a time of crisis, so what powers, what authority did the president have? Questions also sparked when Roosevelt toyed with packing the Supreme Court with more justices who would side with him on many of his economic proposals, which were being struck down by the Supreme Court. The third crisis would be if the Constitution tells us what to do, but it is simply not politically feasible. This happened in the Bush-Gore election. Florida was the deciding state to determine who would be president. The state's election results remained contested for weeks due to a number of irregularities, and yeah, and of course, the Secretary of State wanted to cut the recount short. In theory, the Constitution allowed for various solutions to this problem, but none of them were actually politically feasible and created a crisis for the new president. Of course, what happened was the conservative Supreme Court stepped in and handed the presidency to Bush, cutting the recount short and leading to the death of nearly 500,000 people due to the Iraq War. And the rest is history. And four, institutions themselves fail. Are bells going off in your head? 538 says the following, quote, "The Constitution's system of checks and balances sets the various branches against each other for the laudable purposes of constraining tyranny."
Tyranny. A government in which a single ruler or tyrant has absolute power, this system of government. The office or jurisdiction of an absolute ruler. Absolute power, or its use. Tyranny synonyms, autocracy, despotism, dictatorship, monarchy.
However, due to partisan polarization, individual corruption, and or any number of these reasons, sometimes political institutions in these arrangements fail, sending the governmental system into a crisis. Unquote. Technically, we had a small crisis when Customs and Border Patrol agents were not following the orders from the judicial branch during the original Muslim ban. 538 goes on to point out that had Nixon refused to hand over the tapes when he was ordered to by the Supreme Court, that would have been a constitutional crisis. They say that, quote, "True constitutional crises are rare. The Constitution is set up so that power is shared between the president, Congress, and the courts, and between the federal government and the states. This cuts down on vacuums where no one has clear authority, instead creating situations where multiple people or institutions are empowered to act. Serious constitutional crises occur when our institutions are rendered ineffective, which is usually about politics more than process, and often has less to do with how institutions were designed than how legitimate they are perceived to be." Unquote. With the ruling party in Congress refusing to be a check on the president, I don't see how we are not officially in a constitutional crisis and have been since the election. But I suppose it's good we don't play fast and loose with the term. So, where are we with this possible constitutional crisis of Donald's refusal to enact Russian sanctions? It seems to fall under number 4. One branch of our government is defying the other, thus breaking the law. Checkmate. Or is it? As I said before, Congress wrote into the law that silly little provision granting the president discretion in its enforcement. Okay, so he's not breaking the law. So maybe we go back to the third form of constitutional crisis. The Constitution's intent was clear, but politically infeasible. Vox had a piece about this very thing, and they said, quote, "What if the remedy is clear, but the relevant people in government choose not to do their jobs for political purposes?" That is, what if evidence makes it clear that Trump maintains loyalties to Russia to the detriment of the United States, but members of Congress fail to punish or remove him simply because his party controls that branch? This is indeed a form of crisis. And it's one we've been in pretty much since Trump took office. It may well be that the only remedy to it is an election that places a different party in charge of Congress. That should hardly be satisfactory. The Constitution makes no mention of parties, and it shouldn't have to rely on split control of the government for it to function properly. Unquote. They go on to discuss how in these polarized times, and with no end in sight to such extreme partisanship, the only thing that saves us from the crisis may be split control of the government, all while creating another form of crisis, which is gridlock.
But I'm confident that America will be able to have a free and fair election that will push back in a way that is sufficiently robust that the impact they have on our election won't be great.
Okay, guys, before I go, I have a call to action.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
Demand FBI Director Wray testify on McCabe's resignation. On January 29th, 2018, news broke that FBI Director Andrew McCabe was to resign immediately. Weeks earlier than his anticipated March retirement date, Donald has been attacking McCabe directly for months in an attempt to discredit the FBI's impartiality. Donald has repeatedly and publicly claimed that McCabe is inappropriately biased because his wife has ties to the Democratic Party. Donald has also instructed Attorney General Jeff Zambogat Sessions to push for McCabe's ouster. A mere week before McCabe's announcement, news broke that FBI Director Christopher Wray was threatening to quit rather than acquiesce to Sessions' demands that McCabe resign. While McCabe's resignation itself is no surprise, the timing, combined with the Trump campaign's concerted effort to discredit the FBI, raises so many red flags. Congress must ask FBI Director Christopher Wray to testify to the reasons behind McCabe's sudden departure. Call your representative at 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. Press your representative into getting answers. The Republicans say that sunlight heals all wounds. Tell them it's time for more sunlight on this issue. Okay, guys, thank you for sticking with me on this episode of K Voice of Resistance.
K Voice of Resistance!
You can stream or download the show on crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice or on Facebook where you will find all the stories I have discussed on this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vaughn and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer, 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.